Women's wombs lie at the heart of the Exodus. The story of the Jewish people in Egypt begins with sheer numbers. But the Israelites were fertile and prolific. They multiplied and increased very greatly so that the land was filled with them. Wombs become, in this telling of the story, the key to both the enslavement and the salvation of the Jewish people. It is the miraculous reproductive capacity of these organs that allow the Jewish people to survive Egypt despite the Egyptians' best attempts to quell their growth. But the more they were oppressed, the more they increased and spread out, so that the Egyptians came to dread the Israelites. But wombs are not women. The first chapter of Shemot treats women simply as faceless carriers of babies, almost animal-like in their reduction to agents of reproduction. Indeed, Midrash Tanchuma picks up on the animal-like imagery of Vayishritzu and proposes that the Israelite women gave birth to babies in litters of 6 or even 12. While God acts through them, allowing the Jewish people to thrive despite their oppression, it is the bodies and organs of these women that foster the miracle, not their hearts and minds. Chapter 2, however, begins to hint at a different story. A certain man of the house of Levi went and took a woman of Levi. The woman conceived and bore a son, and when she saw how good he was, she hid him for 3 months. Whereas in chapter 1, the story of the Jewish people is told in terms of the nation as a whole, chapter 2 is a story of a particular family, and more specifically, a particular man and woman. In this story, pregnancy is not a general process that leads to the birth of masses of children. Instead, it is a story of a single woman who conceives and is pregnant and then gives birth to a single child and her response to those events. In this telling of the story, it is not only the production of a child that matters, but the way this woman relates to that production, her response to her child, and her attempts to save him. A midrash, taking its cue from the shift to the specific and personal in chapter 2, offers an account of this nameless woman's conception, pregnancy, and birth. A certain man of the house of Levi went. And where did he go? This teaches that he went on the advice of his daughter. Since Amram was the leader of the generation, when he heard of Paro's evil decree, he said, "We toil for nothing." Immediately, he divorced his wife, and all of the rest of the Jews divorced as well. His daughter said to him, "Father, your decree is more severe than Paro's. Paro only decreed against the boys, while you decreed against the girls as well. Paro's decree only applies in this world, but your decree applies to the next world as well." Immediately, he went and remarried his wife, and all the others remarried as well. Why then does it say he took? It should say he brought back. This teaches that he behaved in the manner of a first marriage. He placed her on a palanquin, and Aaron and Miriam danced before her, and the angel said, "The mother of children rejoices." This midrash notices the juxtaposition between Paro's decree that all baby boys must be drowned in the Nile in the final verse of chapter 1, and the marriage of Moshe's soon-to-be parents in the first verse of chapter 2. Assuming a link between the two events, the midrash asserts that this is not simply a marriage, but a remarriage, one that follows the decision to divorce to avoid bringing children into the world only to see them die. While it is tempting to jump to the happy ending of the midrash with its celebration of the remarriage of Moshe's parents, it is important to notice that the midrash begins with a choice. In a world determined to make them powerless, Moshe's parents make a choice to separate. Their only power in this moment is to decide whether or not to bring children into the world. In what seems to be a decision accompanied by great sadness, they decide to protect their future children in the best way they know how, by avoiding their existence altogether. The midrash asserts that Amram's calculus is skewed, but it also goes beyond that, and in recognizing that there is a choice to be made, it changes Moshe's parents from objects acted upon by forces beyond their control to subjects exercising the small range of control they still have. This midrash is often read as an uncomplicated celebration of natalism, demanding the willingness to conceive and give birth under all circumstances, arguing that birth, regardless of how long or under what circumstances a child may live, is always better than its absence. But in drawing our attention to the choices still available to Moshe's parents, this midrash offers another reading, one that is not simply about the importance of childbirth as an outcome, but the importance of choice and dignity in that process. Unlike the women of chapter 1, Moshe's parents are not simply acted upon. Moshe's mother is not a pawn in the demographic war between Paro and God. She is not primarily the owner of a womb and the carrier of a child. Instead, she is a human being whose ability to choose to have a child or not in this moment of persecution is vital to her personhood. In its illustration of the circumstances of Moshe's conception, the Midrash insists that it is not simply his birth that matters, but the choice that his parents made to conceive him. It is not simply the physical act of birth that ushers in the redemption, but birth accompanied by the life-affirming act of choice and feelings of hope. The journey to freedom in the second chapter of Shemot and in this Midrash is made possible through choice. In the face of a world that sees her in terms of its need to foster or suppress her ability to reproduce, a woman chooses to embrace the possibility of hope. In the face of a world that demands her allegiance to her father's cruel regime, a princess makes the decision to care. In the face of a world that demands that he look away from the persecution of his brothers, the baby that those two women conspired to save turns to look, and in doing so, becomes the man who will save a people.